This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The North Carolina Senate today is scheduled to take up a bill that would become the most restrictive election law in the country. It was legislation that provoked outrage when it was first introduced early in the session. This week, the package became even more restrictive. The bill cuts early voting by a week, lets counties limit Sunday voting, stops pre-registration of 16 and 17-year-olds, and much more. The state legislative Black Caucus is among the critics of the bill. Earlier today, Democratic Senator Earlene Parman called it a voter suppression bill.
Voting is a constitutional right, and we should not put in place barriers that will prevent people from voting. And I stand here today as a North Carolina citizen. I'm ashamed of the kinds of things that we're seeing in the last days of this legislature.
Joining us now to talk about the legislation is WUNC Raleigh Bureau Chief Dave DeWitt. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Frank.
This bill has been on the docket for quite some time in the legislature and changed quite a bit. Tell us about the original voter ID bill.
It was called the Voter Information Verification Act and still is. House Bill 589 has been there since April, but it's really been an issue. The voter ID issue is something that the Republicans brought up almost the first week of the session back in January. This is something they've wanted to get done for some time, and they've had a lot of debates, a lot of opportunity to try to swing people their way. And then yesterday, we learned early in the morning that they were going to add quite a bit of things to just the voter ID bill. It was going to include a lot of other things. You listed some of them, but it really grew in stature. It grew in importance, and it brought a lot of people here to the legislature yesterday to argue against it.
So let's list some of those things that are now in the bill that weren't there Monday.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've only got 12 minutes, but we could take up a lot of the time with it. You mentioned some of them. The number of early voting days would be cut by a week. Straight ticket voting would be eliminated. No more same-day registration. It would end pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds so that they can vote when they turn 18. Any person who wants to challenge someone else's eligibility to vote could do so as long as they live in the same county. It moves the North Carolina presidential primary to a week after South Carolina, if South Carolina holds theirs before March 15th, which they're likely to do. It repeals voter-owned judicial elections. It purges voter rolls more often. And that's really before we even get into some of the changes they made to how much money can come into the system.
Well, I'm going to talk about that in a second. But, you know, the impetus behind voter ID is, look, when you get to the polls, want to make sure that you're the person you say you are, need to have a photo ID. And that was to prevent fraud. There hadn't been much of that fraud, but the legislature wanted to make sure that there would be none of it. So that was it. Now, how does cutting the number of days of early voting or cutting off registration or some of the other voter ID, we didn't get into this, this was part of the original package, in terms of student IDs, which would be acceptable, which won't, and where students may and may not vote. How does that fit into the fraud picture?
Well, that's a good question, and you get a couple of different answers from Republicans who are sort of shepherding this bill through. One of them is sort of what you alluded to, that you need to grow it so that people have confidence in the fact that everyone only votes once, that their vote matters, and that they can trust the electoral process. That was one of the lines of Senator Bob Rucho from Mecklenburg County. He sort of shepherded the bill through the committee yesterday. Senate Pro Tem Phil Berger says, you know, it's about sort of equalizing the experience across counties, that there is a lot of variation that people have if they vote in one county or a different county. And one of the issues they want to do is try and make that somewhat equal or somewhat the same experience. But a lot of it has to do, you know, and you get back to the student ID issue. They say, well, having a voter ID is important, but it's got to be a state-issued ID, and somehow that student ID doesn't meet that circumstance or doesn't meet that requirement because it's being issued by the university and not by a direct state agency.
And then there's where students can vote. They can't vote in the county, so if they're out of county to go to school, they have to go back home to vote. Is that right, or is that still in the
bill?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, and there are a lot of aspects to this bill that really target young voters. And there's a lot of question about why that is. You know, Senator Rucho had a somewhat odd, statement yesterday that, about the pre-registration of 16 and 17 year olds. He was talking about his own son turning 17 in January of an election year. And there's a lot of confusion when he pre-registered and when he could vote and when he couldn't. And it makes you think that some of those elements haven't been thought through and that there's not a lot of research behind them about, you know, is there a lot of fraud that's being perpetrated by young people? And on the Democratic side, they're saying, you know, this is showing that we right away that we're not trusting our young people that they can vote. And that's a bad sign to send to people who are just entering the democratic process.
And the critics are saying, if you take a look at these restrictions, they tend to restrict voters who tend to vote Democratic. Is that part of the critique?
Absolutely, it's part of the critique. As a matter of fact, this morning we heard from both the NAACP and the Legislative Black Caucus, and they made that point emphatically, that these are things that point directly to low-income and oftentimes African-American voters. If you restrict, for example, early voting by a week, that restricts the flexibility one might have to go vote. The Sunday voting is going to be cut a lot of in a lot of places. So that those are days when people who have less flexibility can go vote. And low-income folks who have jobs tend to not have that same kind of flexibility that many people enjoy, and they can go vote. And standing in a line for 2, 3, 4 hours is something that a lot of folks just can't do, especially in rural areas, especially in low-income areas. And so these are rules that many, many people, when whether they're Republicans, Democrats, or independents, they believe, yes, that these will affect African-Americans and low-income folks more distinctly than they do other folks.
And when you talk about those long lines, there's a change in that rule, too. It was the fact that if you were in line and the voting had closed for the day, you could vote. Apparently, in the new legislation, that changes. That's still
no, you actually. If you are in line, you can still vote when it closes. But if you are late getting to the line, or if there is some other issue that has caused some delay in voting, then they can cut it off, you know, when voting ends. But if you are in line, you know, at the end of a voting, you know, on election day, you can still go and finish your voting.
All right. So the critics say this disproportionately hurts low-income people, and it has an impact on African-American voters. Now, we'll talk about the money. If you have money, apparently the restrictions have been eased somewhat.
Right. The bill increases the maximum donation from $4,000 to $5,000 per election. And the bill's authors also say that this amount could go up in the future to keep pace with inflation. There's some irony there, of course. If we talked about the budget bill yesterday, and that'll be something we'll talk about more, teachers aren't getting raises this year, and that's not keeping pace with inflation. You're hearing a lot of that comment around. But access to candidates and the ability to give them donations is going to keep pace with inflation. It also, you know, ends the requirement that candidates endorse ads run by their campaign. The ubiquitous, you know, I'm this candidate and I endorse this message would presumably go away. It also eases the disclosure requirements for independent committees. And there's a lot of question about what this means. There are a myriad disclosure requirements, but most people believe more sunshine should be shown into those areas so that we know who's paying for what. But this bill would go the other way. It would make it a little bit more difficult to know who's paying for what in these elections.
Corporate donations for the operations of a campaign, those rules change?
Yeah, that can those can be hidden now, and they will be increased. They could give money directly. Corporations could give money directly to a political party. That money would be really unknown as to how much that would be done, and who's doing it.
All right. Well, let's move on. So that now it is in the Senate. It's likely to vote. So I will say to you that if you're listening to this at 9 o'clock this evening, then you probably already know the result of this vote. However, we air originally at 1 o'clock. And so, Dave, what's going to happen to this bill from noon forward?
Well, the Senate and the House both get together here at 1 o'clock. And this is on the Senate's docket for today. Nobody thinks it's not going to pass. They all believe, you know, the Republicans have a supermajority. They've got such a majority that even if some of their ranks break and some of the folks decide not to vote for this, and there is some talk around the building here that some Republicans have some problems with some provisions, especially the pre-registration issues involving 16 and 17-year-olds. There are a lot of folks who don't like that even on the Republican side. But if they'll probably take some of these things out. They'll probably tweak some of these provisions, but it will likely, very likely, pass the Senate today, go to the House. Tom Tillis, the Speaker of the House, has already said he believes that it will pass the House as well. It is likely it will be one of the last things that passes at some point tomorrow. That is supposed to be the last day of the session this year.
Governor likely to sign it?
The governor has made absolutely no indication whether he will or will not sign it. He's out of the state right now in California, so we can't ask him. But It's highly likely he will sign it. If he doesn't, that would be news to many people.
You know, it's interesting. There were differences between the House and Senate versions of this bill. Now the more restrictive Senate bill seems to be on its way. And that bill, even the more restrictive Senate bill, got ever more restrictive, a lot more restrictions, coincidentally after the Supreme Court struck down a provision of the Voting Rights Act, which many people said doesn't have an impact anyway. How does that change things? The world has changed. But apparently it had a big impact on the kinds of provisions you would now dare to put in this legislation absent the restrictions on the voting rights bill.
Yeah, that's certainly what the NAACP has indicated this morning, that they are going to make some strong legal challenges to this bill or this law once it gets passed. But there's a lot of question about what that would do and what the system, how the judicial system would view these kinds of restrictions. Certainly, this was something, you know, as we said at the top, has been around for a long time. The voting ID bill has been around for a long time. These provisions, which are much broader, was not brought up at any point until yesterday, a couple days before the session ends, and after, you know, Section 4 got struck down by the Supreme Court. So there are a lot of people making that link. The Republicans say that's not at all what they intended, but you have to wonder, you know, it doesn't give many people an opportunity to make decisions if they don't get a chance to see what these laws are going to do. And this was brought up just yesterday.
All for legislation that was supposed to promote confidence in the system. Dave DeWitt, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Dave DeWitt, WUNC Raleigh Bureau Chief. Coming up, a new film targets political polarization in North Carolina. Our conversation continues on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.